Picture this. You're a successful founder, fund manager, and you're holding in your hand a check for $50 million in less than 2 years from today. What did you do to get there? How did you get investors to trust you with all of that capital? Well, my next guest is about to teach you all of that and more so that you too can enjoy your pursuit of making billions. Let's get into it. Hey, welcome to another episode of Making Billions. I'm your host, Ryan Miller, and today I have my dear friend, Sal Buscemi. Sal is a former investment banker from Goldman, now the managing general partner at Brahmin Partners, as well as the author of four books on finance and investing. This guy's been featured in Forbes, Investor's Business Daily, CBS New York, and more. So what this means is Sal is a capital-raising animal, and he's about to give you a masterclass on raising capital for your investment fund or for your startup. So Sal, welcome to the show, man.
Ryan, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be here. Thank you so much. Longtime listener, first time. I always wanted to be on your podcast. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to be on here. And I really like talking to your community because they understand alternative investment, vaults and stuff like that, and private, you know, all things non-public, you know, that we deal in. So thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, you know what? The honor is all mine. It is certainly a pleasure to have you and all of your carnivorous finance ambitions and energy to come on this show. So you're a managing general partner. You've been in this game for a long time. You're really good at raising capital. Let's jump right into it. So there's people who start. Maybe there's founders listening to the show. We're all over the world in almost 100 countries. Maybe you can walk us through in the beginning. When people are starting out, they want to get good at raising capital. What advice can you give them to A, how to get some early points on the board, and B, how to avoid blowing it up too soon? What would you say?
You know, I've had this conversation since moving to Miami because I think what's happened during the NFT boom, the cryptocurrency boom over the, you know, since the pandemic, there's been a transition of people being very transactional. When you're asking people to part with their life savings, it's relational. It's like asking for marriage. And I say it all the time. And I actually was just at a networking event before I saw you. There's that person who's sitting there and they're like, hey, you know what? Can I talk to you for a second? They have an iPad underneath their left arm. And you know what's going to happen. I think that what you need to do today, and this is what I learned at Goldman Sachs and being a coverage banker, is staying on top of these people. Port all of your prospective investors in the view going, be pursue them for marriage, because it really is marriage. It's a long-term relationship. And that's what I tell all the founders. I said, you know, slow down. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about how you got into this rather than getting into the total addressable market and all the technicalities, because that's all really superfluous at the end of the day. You want to know the person because we bet on the jockeys, not the horses.
Perfect. And, you know, when you're starting out, likely you don't have a lot of track record. So for people starting out who may not have the track record that other people can trust, so, you know, having relationships, I mean, you know, from listening to the show, the two most valuable assets in your possession are your reputation and your relationships. Yeah, you got it, brother. So
I listen. I actually listen to your show.
You know what you do, man. You're the man. So what about track record, right? So this is, it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. It's like, I need a track record to raise, but I need to raise to get a track record. And I know, because you and I have talked about this before, what advice can you give to someone who's just trying to raise, but maybe literally it's their first raise? What would you tell them?
I think the interactivity is your currency. And if you're able to capture attention from investors, and I'm thinking about this from both a founder standpoint and also like a real estate sponsor. So, I mean, I can, you know, we're wearing two hats, but really just if I were to do this and start all over again, I would be very evangelic about my business or the industry that I'm in. Sort of like a vegan or a CrossFitter, you know, right? Within 2 minutes of meeting them what they are. And, you know, maybe you've met someone who's a sports fan, all they can talk about is sports, and maybe politics, all they can talk about is politics. But people really want to build a relationship and be part of a community. You can put together a community of people where you're starting out, and this is the key, you're of service to them, then everything will work out for you. For example, brokering contact, high value, high impact contacts that maybe has that you can share to help someone else. That's how you build a relationship. Because if people respect you, they're going to respect the referrals. And I can tell you this from personal experience, Brian. If you don't respect the person giving you the referral, you're not going to respect the referral.
Yeah. Like you said, it's just like marriage, right? You gotta court and be on top of it. You know, one of the things that I found really interesting as you and I were talking offline, you know, you mentioned, and I've seen this a lot. So I've helped, I mean, shoot, probably 1,000 people to launch their fund. I'm just guessing here. But, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, and even me in the early days, is I would often get, I've adopted the saying that the deal of a lifetime comes by every 3 months. And so with that, deals are always coming at me. And you have an interesting philosophy about should you get on top of deals or get on top of raising capital first? I wonder if you can maybe open that up. And your perspective is, where should someone who's raising capital, where should they start? Should they start with examining a whole bunch of deals? Should they start with courting investors? What do you think?
I think what they need to do is they start sharpening the axe. So what that means is start talking to the investors, courting the investors. The deals will always be there, especially now in distressed real estate. Like, I've been waiting for this for these 10 years. Yeah. So I'm going into my third cycle. I can't wait for it. But I've also been building a relationship and the reputational capital to be able to draw on that at will by giving somewhat goodwill up front, whether it's helping someone. And, you know, we've done a lot of interesting things, and it depends on your talents. Like, you know, I'm a writer. I've written 3 books. I've helped people with their college essays. You know, you do all sorts of, you know, weird things like that, but it actually builds relationships and trust over time. And then when the opportunities come and you know what you're doing, that at that point you're able to execute and really harvest the relationship for the equity that you have in this relationship.
Brilliant. And you mentioned that you started a WhatsApp group for investors when you moved to Miami. There's a lot of other stuff that you mentioned, like you've taught me. I'll ruin the surprise. I'm totally stealing your thunder, Sal, that starting a blog, a newsletter, getting in the press, or even writing a book. You've written, three or four now?
I'm on my fourth now, but I've written.
You're 30. On your fourth. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I knew there was 4 in there. I didn't know if you were done yet. So I guess I ruined the surprise in the intro. So that's really good. So you're starting contact, you're giving people mediums to stay in touch, or you're staying in touch with them with blogs, contacts. I mean, you could do event. I mean, there's all kinds of things, WhatsApp groups. I mean, there's so many ways. So I think the message here, and keep me honest, Sal, the message here is, look, if you're just starting out, the important thing is stay on top of investors. Deals will be there. Deals will come. This is according to the gospel of Sal. But also have these platforms or these mechanisms that you can connect investors into and start forming a community. Would you say that's a fair summary?
Yeah, that's important. You want to give value first. And if you put together a community of kind people, you're going to be, you're going to find out that you're going to become a center of influence very quickly. And that's really what it's coming down to, is for building that respect, building that trust over time, even though you might not have a track record. It's just like you're getting people together because everybody wants to know somebody that knows someone, right? We're still clicky. We're still 17 at heart, no matter how old we are, and people always gravitate towards certain people who are like them. If you're able to put together a network and influential people, they can help each other. People are going to want to repay that to you substantially. You have to provide a tremendous amount of value first. You can't be transactional, just going up to someone, just like anyone else would in your DM saying, hey, you want to buy this next, cryptocurrency.
It sounds like you've been in my LinkedIn inbox. I get hit up all, it's like 5 a day, I swear. It's just like, I can help you with a custom suit. And
no, they help me with all sorts of things that I don't need.
Exactly. Thank you for watching. If you've made it this far, we must be friends. So don't forget to like, subscribe, and click that notification button. Now, let's get back to the show. So what about, just turning a corner on that? So those are some great advice, folks, from Sal himself, is just like, here's how you get some early points on the board when you're just starting out, you're trying to do your first deal, your first fund, your first startup, whatever it is, you need investors to pay attention and cut you a check. In order to do that, we definitely need to generate and get some early points on the board. But it's not that simple, because you can screw things up, right? And there's a saying, I either win or I learn, I never lose, and all these things. Sure, you're right. But it still sucks, and it can set you back a little bit. What advice or what have you seen as far as like just some of the things where people kind of get knocked out or just have to take a couple steps back because they didn't see something coming? There's just rookie mistakes. What advice could you give to people to avoid rookie mistakes?
That's a very good point. I think people need to relax. I think they need to be themselves. I think they need to understand that, look, you need to have a lot of hits at bat, right? You have to practice. You have to do the rep, as you say, to the point where you get confident enough to casually talking about your business at a point where somebody feels comfortable about it. I think, if somebody's asking you for marriage on the first date, that's kind of creepy, right? I mean, that's not how you build a relationship. Sex is transactional. As in the relative purposes of this conversation, but what you're getting into is a marriage with someone, and you need to court them. And I think people too many times, just like they get an introduction and they start pitched. Nobody wants to be sat there and be pitched, really. I mean, think about how many people hate commercials to begin with, and it's actually killing a lot of like legacy media because nobody wants to much to commercials anymore. And it's something that I think you need to really understand is, like, build a relationship first. Have something in a systemized way where if I come into your ecosystem, what does that look like? Do I get an email from you? Do I get a newsletter from you? Do you link in with me? Do you post on LinkedIn a lot? How do I follow you in your progress?
That's right. I love that. You know, in my early days, I'll be a little bit vulnerable here, Sal. I don't think you know this story, but to echo your point and these analogies of building a relationship that's working towards marriage and building a relationship that's working towards a long-term investment and maybe partnership, there's a lot of parallels. And I remember when I was a younger man, and I was, so I was like, you know what? I was single and I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready. You know, you're doing well in your career. And you're like, you know, it would be really cool if I had someone to share this with. You know, I don't need it. I have a great life, but it'd be nice. And I was like, it took me down this rabbit hole of love. So hang in there with me, folks. This will make sense in a minute. Welcome to the dating podcast. This is a bait and switch. No, there are some parallels in raising money, and I've used this a lot. So this is now the gospel of Ryan. So I was like, why are everybody's so crazy and they pursue relationships and love or what they think that is, you know, it's different for everybody. And I was like, why are we that way? And what is love? And I started to, and you can have a romantic relationship. You can have your best friend, right? Guys will be like, I love this guy, right? Like there's many layers to that, but what are you actually saying? And if you could have an LP, an investor, or somebody on your fund, your project, your startup that are like, I love this founder, right? If you have that level, how did you get there? And I racked my brain for a long time. And the answer that I came up with is I realized, at least from my perspective, is that love is the highest, most evolved form of trust. I could be wrong, but this made sense. And so I was like, great. So if that is the genesis, if that's the seedling of love and a very deep lasting relationship where you got each other's back and it's very productive and healthy, it all starts and possibly ends when you lose trust. And I'm not saying that's the one thing to rule them all. I'm just saying that's a very important thing. We as human beings are driven toward love, but it's hard to get there unless you've developed the foundational work of trust. I've used that same concept when I'm courting investors, is to say, I'm not here for a one night stand to just do that. Like you, right? I'm not here to be transactional.
I'm not like the other founders. No, I'm different.
Yeah. I'm different. So what this is now I'm saying, look, why don't you figure out how you can trust me? That's all I want from you right now is for you to do your homework on me. And this goes back to your reputation. And so the reputation relationships continue in this virtuous cycle, elevating you and your projects. And so my goal when I'm meeting someone, and I don't know about you, it might be different, it might be the same, is to say, look, goal number one, objective number one, is we need to develop a level of trust that when I say I'm going to do something for you, you know I'm going to follow through. Or when you say you're going to invest, I know it's going to happen, or you're going to be a great partner. And that there is a level of trust. And if we have trust, we can build on that. And when that trust grows and they're like, I love this founder, I love Ryan, I love Sal, typically they start reeing up on more checks.
Well, trust also comes from respect. And sometimes, you know, some investors don't respect you, and you need to lay the boundaries of the relationship in a way where they can respect you and then love you. The way my investors love me, and I would say I'm a lovable guy by any means, but they love me because I do one simple thing for them. I'm trustworthy, honest. It says everybody else, right? I mean, I'm trustworthy. You know, I'm going to sell you a car. You know, like anybody's trustworthy. But the one thing that I've learned for people to trust you is that you show them, or if you can elevate their status.
So they have a boost in their reputation by doing a deal with you.
If you were to look at the videos that I do for my LPs in our real estate deal, it's meant for them to look good. And I've actually had feedback where members have been successful with the opposite sex because they said, well, look at this deal I'm in. I'm investing into it, the classy industrial deal. Or, you know, they're on like their third date. So, you know, when you elevate somebody else's status, and I actually wrote about this in a guide, but I'll just mention it right now. It's called Calling the Capital, and there's 20 different case studies about how I elevated people's status to get money quickly for real deals, like good deals, not just like in a very manipulative standpoint, but from a way where we can say, you know, we've given away like soccer jerseys, autographed by the entire Chelsea football club. Like there's been some real stuff that we've done. But when I moved to Miami, I noticed in the ecosystem, again, going back, there was no trust. It was transactional. And I said, you know what? I got to put something together here. And I put together a little guide. It's available on Amazon, but you can get it for free by going to callingthecapital.com. And there's all sorts of, you know, stories, tomfoolery about how we've been able to do that.
Brilliant. All right. Callingthecapital.com or Amazon. Now, I just want to finish off this, how to not blow it up in the beginning. What about finding a partner? I know you have a few areas where you say, stay away from these particular types of people in a partnership. Who are those people that you personally, your opinion, who would you advise not to do? I know the answer, but I'd love for you to say it out loud. It might get you into trouble.
Yeah, no. You know, it'll get, I mean, you can edit this out. For me, I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter. anyone that does not have any sort of salesmanship in their DNA sits away from. People who are CPAs, accountants, they're allergic to risk. Anything you do as a founder or as a real estate GP, sponsor, equity raiser, it involves risk. Same thing with management consult. They're just CPAs that only just hire paid a little bit. And these are not good. And from my experience, we're not good partners because they don't see the risk. They're very conservative. And, you know, for them, they don't really understand the eat what you kill mentality. They're very sterile. People who are used to putting things in a box like that, they might fantasize about being an entrepreneur and being a founder, but at the end of the day, they don't really have it because it's just me and their DNA because they're not sales. You have to be, and I, you know, there's a video I'm posting on LinkedIn later this week, but it talks about the art of coverage banking, being a relationship banker at Goldman Sachs. Those are the guys that make $10, $50 million a year because they maintain the relationship. You know, CTAs make that much money for a reason. Does that make sense?
That's right.
People who are very dry, you need to find someone, and whatever it is, especially in real estate, the second rule of real estate is always be raising capital. And if you can't be with someone who is going to raise capital for you day and night, along with you as a founder, the co-founder, or at least helping, then that's going to be a problem. You need to do that. I think the highest and best use of partners are the people who skill set that's complementary but different than yours. For me, I'm more of the game show host in this thing. So I go out there, I talk to people, I just happen to be able to do math in my head. But, you know, there's certain things that I'm good at, certain things I'm not good at. And that's why I have a partner that does all of that stuff for me. So that's the most important part. What you don't want are two frontmen, right? You don't want David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar. Yeah. But you have to make sure that the person who does come to you, and I've seen this before, especially with founders, if they're, you know, everything is a price. And, you know, if they're looking to be partners with you for a $50,000 check in your company, they're probably going to handicap you, cut you off the knee because they're going to want all sorts of control to make themselves look better than what's in the best interest of the company. So remember, when you're the CEO and a founder, you need to start looking towards the bigger dollars, bigger bucks, not necessarily dealing with smaller investors who are just, you know, paying you to go along, you know, by subsidizing your company. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. So let's turn the corner and head her to second base. So the second part I'd like to talk about is the market. The market is, you know, I'm making it sound like it's this one thing. There's so many angles, viewpoints, perspectives, and helpful advice when it comes to navigating the market. This is the one thing that ties us all together. So what would you say? What's your perspective? What are you seeing out there with the market? And then maybe we can go on to where you see it going and some of the opportunities. But what are you seeing out there right now?
I'm going to look at the market as a whole. I'm just meaning the American market, not including real estate, equities, you know, publicly traded stuff. I think the United States is still a great, safe place for rich folks to invest. And you're still going to see the repatriation of capital. That's going to manifest in several different ways, mostly in the stock market. But the true wealthy people today, they see what's happening. They see the writing on the walls that might relate to political situations, which means that they are getting more involved today in private stuff than ever before. That's private direct investment, private credit, private equity in some shape or form. Because what they do see and what they do foresee is a bet right now, and this is just my conjecture, that although anything that happens with the election is going to be tested, if Trump does get into office, it'll probably be the most jubilant IPO market this country will ever see. And there, you know, there's a lot of preparation for that. There's a lot of smart money out there that has access to asymmetric information. I think that there's always going to be pockets of situations in real estate right now. There's certain markets where, you know, it depends on how much risk you have, how thick the stomach lining is for you to you know, maybe take on some risk. I know that we're very conservative in certain things, but we're also moving maybe in the Class A office in Manhattan. We love Class A industrial. We are moving into that, but we like moving into things where there's more of what we would call statement class. Well, our investors are already wealthy. They're not looking to get rich. They're not looking to go into like Houston Class C multifamily rehab or, you know, turn it around and get it out. And, you know, hopefully, you know, there's a lot of great things that need to happen before you get paid. And today, you know, there's a lot of investors because the credit laws have changed in many blue states where it becomes very prohibitive for these investors to be profitable. So people are realigning, but they're also getting smarter today. And I think that there is a bifurcation between the rich and the poor. And if you're poor, you're getting rich quick. You're betting on NFTs. You're betting on crypto. You're betting on, you know, meme stocks. That's Jim Cramer. He turned, you know, the NYSE into a WWF forum. And that's great because that pays for a lot of the advertising for CNBC and Bloomberg for being able to do that, where, you know, the transaction costs, regardless. I mean, Schwab's going to make money whether the stock goes up or down just on transaction fees. And a lot of people today now, they're looking to make much, especially the wealthier, the top 1,000th of 1%, they're looking to make an impact more so than just an outsized return. But, you know, they're looking to see where else is my money get for me.
Brilliant. What are you seeing out there with banks? You have a pretty strong opinion on that. What's your thought on the banking sector?
All right, that's a loaded question. pragmatically speaking, banks are technically bankrupt. I don't understand why they're still in business. I think you're going to see a contraction from 4,082 banks that I saw today, I think, to probably about between 15 to 1,800. There's going to be a consolidation and a contraction. The problem is that every mortgage that they made, they're losing money on right now. And it's not going to be sustainable with the rates that they are today. And being able to sustain that type of, you know, negative arbitrage, if you will, in a bank. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of changes, I think. I think there's some models that need to be changed. But there's a lot more, I think, going on behind the scenes than people really know what's happening. And if you were to look at the balance sheet, a lot of these banks, they're zombies at this point. If it wasn't really some politics and politicians, I don't really know why we would need banks today.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. So there's some consolidation. This is where you see it going. That's your market call. And then you mentioned earlier about if your call is if there is a Trump win, that would likely lead to a stronger IPO market, which...
Jubilation, exuberant.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Exuberance. Yeah. I mean, this would be absolutely outstanding.
Okay. And that could lead to greater foreign direct investment and a lot of people trying to get into a lot of these companies as IPOs taken off.
Or anything in America.
Or anything, yeah, exactly. So strong IPO is typically the vacuum that pulls everything into it. So if you're a startup, it tends to really be helpful for you. Brilliant, man. I love it. So, you know, the final segment of the show, I'd love to just talk about, because you're an experienced guy, you're in Miami. I mean, dude, you're killing it. You're living your best life, man. Oh, no, that was a little a sliver of jealousy for me. So I'm what you call the frozen chosen up here in Canada. But,
I have a lot of Canadian friends. Like, there's a direct flight from Canada down to Miami from Toronto. I have a lot of Toronto friends. Yeah.
It's a great country. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, being in Miami, you're living your life, you're running these things, you've done a ton of experience. Some of it's great. Some of it, I'm sure you'd rather forget. But either way, it's experience either way. And it all culminates into wisdom. I wonder if you could share maybe two or three things that you can give our listeners just to give them that competitive advantage. What would you say?
I learned a lesson, and it got me into a heated, let's just say, dialogue with my first publisher when I wrote my first book. And that is that I did not put any of my contact information or way to reach me in my first book. My first book was very successful. And what would happen was, it was just happenstance. I just wanted to write a book. And I wrote a book called Making the Yield, Hard Money Lending Uncovered. And immediately it went to $1,800 because the publisher didn't have enough. They were getting phone calls all the time from people who read the book. And they said, you know what you're doing? I want to give you money. And I think anyone who is looking to do any sort of capital raising, the path to immediate legitimacy, even if you publish it yourselves, is to publish a book. Because at that point, you become the authority, right? Authors are authority figures. And that helps you a lot with the capital raising experience. Plus, it's the best business card you can ask. And yeah, I think if you really need to do something different. I see all these people, they're doing funds and they want to raise money for funds and they talk about things, you know, we talk about this, the derivatives and stuff. But if you have a guy that's, you know, a multifamily office or a family office that, you know, has $200 million sitting in his checking account and, you know, he just inherited that and now he needs to talk to someone about it. Sitting over a coffee with him is not going to give him the complete view that he needs or the vantage point to make a great decision. So I invite people, and I've done this before, just based on happenstance, it's been very, very successful. And I've been able to raise hundreds of million dollars around this is just by writing a book.
Man, brilliant. So have a book, have a content strategy, but whatever it is that you do, whatever it is you put out there, just make sure that it should be designed to put you as a person who has some authority or reputation in this industry. I love it. What else would you say? What advice can you give our listeners?
I would also say, and this is something that I've been seeing, you know, if people who are young, guard your reputation with your life, especially today. A lot of people, I mean, we've talked about this, it's kind of cliche, but, you know, if you're out there and you're raising money and they see you on like a first class, you know, Emirates flight to the UAE for a reason, you know, be congruent with your lifestyle. And the other thing I would really, really urge you guys to do is to continue to network and foster relationships and be of service. Like, you know, Ryan, I sent you a bunch of stuff after we talked a few weeks ago, a bunch of emails, but I was always giving you contact, talking to this guy. brokering relationships is the highest form of regard. If you are broken, you have $2 in your bank account, you have impressive relationship that you can broker to someone else, that means a lot more because now you're opening trust. And that trust is something I make the introductions to people, and like I'll write, what I do is I'll be honest. I just like, we'll talk about it. I'll do it in a, I'll just transcribe it to an email, send it to me. And then I run it through Grammarly, and I take it very seriously because I do the link to LinkedIn and the name and everything. I treat it as if like, if this guy's going to be an investor or someone who the founder who's asking for money, I introduce them as if they're like, maybe like candidates for marriage with each other, not to be awkward, but, you know, like I'm very serious about this. You know, like if you were to be introduced to your spouse, how would you want your spouse to be introduced to you at? And that takes a little bit of time. And of course, you know, people can outsource that too. I don't really condone that, but I've done it in a way where sometimes it's been a little sloppier. You know, the intent is there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So as we wrap things up, I'm curious, is there anything else you'd like our fans around the world to know, ways to contact you, the names of your book, anything at all?
Yeah, I think, you know, I have a website. It's salvatorebuscemi.com. But I think really, if you are a founder or you're an investor and you want to see how we dialogue with our multifamily office and, you know, with our families and our multifamily office called Brahmin Partners, I would urge you to go to brahminpartners.com and just sign up. And what that'll do is we'll onboard you and you can see exactly more of an intimate look about what the things are that we invest into and why we invest into them. And you can see, we love putting on content. We love the interactivity with our families. And it really works because it sort of, you know, opens the kimono to everything and how we work, even our legal structure, to our investors. So we leave no stone unturned.
Brilliant. Well said. So just to summarize everything Sal and I have said, become the authority of your in your area, perhaps write a book, but have a content strategy that's designed to make you an authority on the subject. As I like to say is, you don't have to be the expert, but just make sure you are known as a expert. And that can be good enough. And typically it is most of the time is like, look, you don't have to be Warren Buffett, but that doesn't mean you don't have value you can add in the finance space. So whatever it is you put out there, just make sure that the strategy is to position you with that reputation as an expert. You know, and the second thing that you mentioned was guard your reputation as you would your life. I mean, this leads to your personal brand. And so that you should take that very serious because a brand is an asset that could put money in your pocket. And so make sure that you are, if you're listening to Sal, if you're listening to me, make sure you do everything in your power to make sure that that asset, your personal brand, otherwise known as your reputation, make sure that that asset is very valuable. Don't ever do anything or allow other people to do something to harm that reputation. But often, more often than not, it's typically self-inflicted wounds on reputational damage. But there's many other avenues to that. But just be mindful that your reputation is one of the most valuable assets in your possession. So make sure you treat it that way. And finally, the third thing that he mentioned is continue to build and broker your relationships, all starting with proving that you're worthy of the investor's trust. You do these things, and you too will be well on your way in your pursuit of making billions.